Welcome to the Industrial Talk Podcast with Scott McKenzie. Scott is a passionate industry professional dedicated to transferring cutting-edge, industry-focused innovations and trends while highlighting the men and women who keep the world moving. So put on your hard hat, grab your work boots, and let's go.
All right, welcome to the Industrial Talk Podcast, the number one industrial-related podcast in the universe. I'm not overselling that. I don't think I am. Thank you very much for joining. We celebrate you, industry heroes, all around the world because you are bold, you are brave, you dare greatly, you solve problems, you make people's lives better, and you're changing the world. I don't think there's anything else better to celebrate than you. Thank you very much for what you do and joining the Industrial Talk Podcast. All right, in the hot seat, we got a gentleman by the name of Ron Gusick, president of Liberty Oilfield Services. We're going to be talking a little bit about fracking 101, pretty cool topic, as well as technology, the advancements of technology, and how it just makes the world a better place. Gosh, you guys are great. All right, let's get cracking. Ron, go out to a stat card, big time stat card. You'll say, wow, he's got some skills. He's got some mad street cred, as well as he's a super nice guy, as is a lot of people within industry. Super nice people. I don't know. I'm living the dream. Before we get in the interview, let's just talk a little bit about business. We have a we're in the process. Industrial Talk 2.0. And what we're doing there is we're just sort of redesigning. We have the podcast, we have videos, we have training, we have everything. And now we want to be able to begin pursuing and having greater educational opportunities for industrial professionals, greater and easier collaboration opportunities with industry professionals. Like, for example, if you want to get involved, let's just say you want to reach out to Ron here. You can see what he's doing, what his team's doing at Liberty Oilfield Services, and so on and so forth, and be able to create these great opportunities to be able, because I'll tell you right now, Ron, others are really into this whole education, collaboration, and innovation. I think that's where we have to be, and that's where we're going, and that's what Industrial Talk 2.0 is. We want masterminds. We want to solve problems, more problems, using and connecting with the individuals that make things happen, which is everybody, and then be able to put it together. Because I think me, and I just got done talking with Intel, that the same thing exists. We just don't have pre-pandemic. Yeah, maybe we have the solutions. During this pandemic, during this next normal, during this new normal, whatever it might be, I think what we're looking at is a necessity and people's willingness to collaborate and solve problems, because that's really where it is. And I think that more and more people are just doing that. And that's what this is all about. I'm just telling you right now, that's what this is all about. All right. That's Industrial Talk 2.0. Be on the lookout for that. All right. Another thing. Nah, there's not. I'm going to hold off on that. Let's talk a little bit around Ron Gusick. All right, Liberty Oilfield. He's been there for about 7 years, a little over. He's got oil and gas pedigree like nobody's business, and just a all-around great guy. Canadian, just like my parents, so he is a nice guy. But we're talking about fracking 101, and I think that it's real interesting for us to have that realization that energy is very important, especially today. And companies like Liberty, they're doing everything they can to deliver the energy, to deliver the products at the lowest possible price, and do it in such a way that it minimizes the impact to communities and the society. They have a really beautiful purpose. And you can tell, man, they've got that desire to do it and do it right. Gosh, Liberty Oilfield Services. All right, let's get on with the interview. Ron Gusick is in the hot seat. He spells his last name G-U-S-E-K. Reach out, but, you know, it'll all be out on industrialtalk.com, everything that you need to know to be able to connect. All right, enjoy the interview. Ron, wow. Welcome to the Industrial Talk Podcast. Absolute honor. How are you doing today?
Doing very well, thanks, Scott. Excited to be here with you. So thanks very much for having me.
I have no idea how excited. I was looking forward to this interview. I was looking on my calendar, and I'm going, all right, Ron's right around the corner right there. And I might as well just sort of sit here and just be excited about this conversation. All right. All the listeners, we're going to be talking a little bit about what Liberty Frac does. You can imagine in their name. Yep. They're in the oil and gas industry, and they definitely help a lot of companies do a lot of great things. And we're going to go into that particular conversation. But before we do that, Ron, little 411, because your stat card's great out there, but little 411 on who you are.
All right. Quick history on me. Grew up in Canada, just outside of Edmonton, Alberta, and ended up going to engineering school. I love taking apart cars and things like that. So mechanical engineering was in my nature. My dad was a carpenter, pretty handy guy. And so I was a hands-on sort of person. And so engineering came pretty natural to me. Swore I'd never work in the oil and gas industry. You know, I grew up in Alberta in a crazy time and thought that was too volatile an industry for me. And so started working in heating, ventilation, and air conditioning. Figured everybody'd need that all their lives. That's a safe place to go to work. But hard to avoid oil and gas in Alberta. So it didn't take probably 4 years after I got out of school and I ended up in oil and gas. Have been in it ever since. So I'm almost 25 years in the oil and gas industry now, seen a good chunk of the world as a result of it, but most of that based in Calgary, but packed up and moved down here to Denver in 2014 and been here with Liberty ever since.
That is amazing. It's hard. Yeah. You're in Alberta. It's hard to avoid that oil and gas. It's a big deal up there.
It is a big deal. 30% of the GDP or something like that. So,
it's off the charts. Yeah, it's a big deal. Yeah, it's hard to avoid it. And but being in the business for 25 years, you've seen a lot of changes, a lot of technology, a lot of advancements. And from my perspective, all pretty beneficial. You're not sitting out there trying to say, hey, I'm going to make it as inefficient as I possibly. No, you guys are always pursuing that technology, the efficiencies, and being able to achieve that as much as you possibly can. Now, for the listeners out there, and for me too, because I'm not the sharpest tool in the shed, give us a little fracking 101 and what Liberty Frac does. Just give us a little basis, and then we'll just sort of boop, springboard from there.
All right. Sounds good. A little basics on exactly what we do. So, you know, today when we drill a well, it's something called a horizontal well. So we're going to drill down maybe 7,000, 8,000, 10,000 feet into the ground vertically. And then we're going to turn that well horizontally and we're going to drill out a mile or two or three inside the rock that we are interested in. And then the problem is the rock that we're drilling into, the natural pore spaces in it, the holes for the molecules to flow through, are so small that oil and gas wouldn't naturally flow out to the hole, to the well that we just put in. And so it needs a little help. And so we do something called hydraulic fracturing, which is creating cracks in that rock, radiating outwards from that well bore that we drill. And that provides a better pathway for oil and gas to get to the surface. I kind of liken it to creating a city. So, you know, if everybody wants to get downtown, you know, we have major freeways on which all of the cars can get from their little neighborhoods. Then you get out onto a big freeway and then ultimately you end up in the place you need to get to. Fracking is just like that. We put, we put a big wellbore down there, which is the major freeway. And then we create all these arteries into it, which are the hydraulic fractures. And that gives those little molecules a path to get to surface where we can use them.
So the question I have, somebody had to come up with this thing, this fracking solution. How long has it really been around?
It's been around a long time, well more than 50 years. We started fracking in North America back in the 1940s or 1950s. It looked a lot different back then, of course, but fundamentally the exact same idea that we do today. We just do it at a different scale.
See, I never knew that. The way I sort of look at it is like, hey, this came out, it's relatively new and they're doing this but it's a technology that's been, geez. Yeah, that's a long time.
It is a long time, it's evolved for sure. We do it at a different scale today. We do a lot more of it. The reservoirs we work in require more stimulation, more fracking to produce oil or gas, but still exactly the same principle that we started decades and decades ago.
So in this particular case, the benefits of fracking are obvious. You can get greater yield from a specific location. And you know, it's, I guess, and correct me, Ron, if it's like low-hanging fruit, I can pick it, but maybe there's some fruit that's a little higher up and that tree can yield more. From that analogy, which is, I admit, very weak. However, it is for me and the listeners. Anyway, from a yield perspective, what can we see from an existing location, greater yield? What are we talking about?
Well, I would guess that most of the wells we drill today, if you didn't frack them, they wouldn't produce a drop of oil or gas. You would get almost nothing out of them. Hydraulic fracturing means the difference between a well that does nothing and a well that will produce hundreds of thousands of barrels of oil or millions and millions of cubic feet of gas over its lifetime. That wasn't true historically. It used to be you could drill a well and it would flow on its own, and it would flow that way for years and years and years. But today, the reservoirs we work in, that's not the case. They require stimulation to produce at any economic level.
Amazing. And you're getting it to a point, and once again, I would imagine a driver is a cost per barrel, and the solution needs to sort of be within that economic benefit. If it's outside of it, then it makes no sense. But if it's within that, so you're constantly driving to the point of trying to make it more efficient, better, cost effective.
Yeah, I mean, of course, oil and gas are commodities, and so they are driven by a supply-demand curve to at least some extent. And so, you know, there's a price out there that we can get for a barrel of oil. And ultimately, you know, if a company's going to be a success, they have to find a way to produce a barrel of oil for less money than they are able to sell it for. Same is true of any business, and ours looks no different than that. Now, of course, you know, the great thing about having low oil and gas prices is that everybody benefits from that. You know, we all consume hydrocarbons in some way, shape, or form. That might be directly in the form of your furnace or hot water tank or something like that. That might be a little less directly in the form of gasoline in your car, but we all consume those. Less expensively, we can ultimately find a way to produce a barrel of oil or a molecule of gas. The less expensive energy is for humanity. And so, you know, we have to continue to be innovative and find ways to lower the cost of energy. And we also have to find ways to lower the impact of producing that energy.
When you say impact, what do you mean by that?
Well, I think there's a lot of ways you could think about that. Certainly the most talked about one is the thoughts around impact CO2 emissions in the climate. So that's a very, very big picture one. But you could also drill down to a much smaller level than that. You know, here in Colorado, the majority of the or the core of the field that we work in is right up and down the Front Range of the Rockies here, which also happens to be where the vast majority of people are moving into Colorado. And so we find ourselves in a situation where we are going to be working in very, very close proximity to a place where somebody's living, close to a backyard, close to a park or a playground or a school or something like that. And so, as you know, when we put that pad in place and ultimately go out there to work through the exercise of drilling and completing those wells before they produce, there's some impact to those folks. There's noise and some dust and some truck traffic. And we recognize that as an inconvenience to the people who are nearby there. And so it's incumbent upon us as industry to find ways to minimize that impact for the time that we are there. So we don't want to keep them up at night with loud engines. We don't want trucks coming and going at all hours of the night to the extent we can avoid that. We want to find ways to minimize the dust in the air so that they don't have their enjoyment of the outdoors taken away from them. So we continue to focus on solutions to try to get that local impact as small as possible.
See, that's interesting because, you know, of course your business wants to do that. Of course you want to minimize your impact because the value of what you're doing is important, because beyond the natural gas component and beyond the obvious one, gasoline, petrochemicals, I mean, it's in everything. I mean, you look, it's everywhere, right? And without it, I mean, you're just like my speakers, I guarantee you, right? But it's, we forget the massive impact, but then you've got this desire within, let's say, Liberty Frac to to really minimize the local impact to the community and the people, because that's important too. And I'll say it, you live in beautiful country.
You do.
But there's the resource, and you're going to be challenged to do it in a way that makes sense. And you guys accomplish that. That's how I look at it.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. Having worked in this industry now, I've grown to truly appreciate what energy has done for humanity and what it will continue to do for the future. And so I think what we do is incredibly important. You made a lot of great points there. Oil and gas is everywhere around us. There are the obvious things like transportation fuel and whatnot, but plastic, medicine, and the list go fertilizer for agriculture. The list goes on and on and on. There are lots of great videos out there that show what life would look like without oil and gas, and and it is a shadow of the the world that we enjoy today. So we view what we do as incredibly important, and while a lot of people maybe don't recognize exactly how critical oil and gas is to their world, we know that, but we take very seriously our responsibility to produce what we view as maybe the most needed industry in the world, to do so as responsibly as we possibly can. And yes, to your point, that means continued investment in technology and innovation to find new and better ways to do things.
So speaking of that, you touched upon it. It's a bullet point on my sheet right here, Ron, is let's talk about technology. You're constantly investing, you're constantly applying, you're constantly looking at the technology that can produce the results that you need to produce, minimize whatever it needs to be minimized, make it more efficient, and so that the cost points are constantly being. What recent technologies can you sort of point to that says, yeah, this is cool?
Yeah, sure. I'll point to a couple. The list is long, and we could go all kinds of ways with that. But let me go back to that whole idea of reducing impact in a local area. We take a lot of equipment out to a location to frack a well. If you ever have a chance to go visit a location, it is something to see. We will drive out there. Your average car is maybe 200, 250, 300 horsepower in the engine. We will take 50,000 horsepower out to location. So you can appreciate that's a lot of engines out there running at the same time. And they make a lot of noise. And so we work 24 hours a day, 365 days a year to produce energy. And so, if we're out there making a lot of noise and somebody's trying to sleep through the night next door, that's not a good combination. And of course, that frustrates them. And so we worked hard to find a way to quiet down that equipment to make sure that even if we were running it 2 o'clock in the morning, if you were 500 feet away from where all of that equipment is running, you would not be able to hear it. And so a few years ago, we rolled out something called the Quiet Fleet, and it takes the noise level for our equipment down at 500 feet to less than 65 decibels, which is, just in common terms, quiet conversation. So if you're 500 feet from our frack location where all of those big pumps and engines are running, you can listen to the birds chirping now. And that was important for us, particularly here in Colorado, in the Northeast, for example. They do a lot of work around residential areas there. And even in Texas, we find we're doing work closer to cities there as well. So that's one example. Another good example just might be evolution from an emissions standpoint. We, of course, those are big diesel engines. And if you've driven around behind a diesel truck, that they emit black smoke sometimes, particulates. And so we've continued to invest in the best engine technology to make sure that our emissions profile looks smaller. And so, when we first started the company 10 years ago, that was those engines met a tier 2 emission specification. We now have moved to the latest and greatest, which is tier 4. That's like a factor of 10 reduction in those particulate emissions versus what they used to look like not that long ago. So the emissions are getting cleaner. Our next step that we're working on right now is actually an electric frack fleet, a fleet that will be driven by electric motors instead of by diesel motors. We'll have that out for test this year, but ultimately commercialized, I think, next year. That'll be a dramatic step forward in what one of those locations sounds like, looks like, and operates like. So yeah, lots of big investments. And I mean, these are not inexpensive things measured in millions and millions of dollars to deploy technology.
I'm stunned by the quiet equipment that I know. I've seen it. If I come to Colorado, I expect a trip to one of your locations, but serious, serious equipment. And I'm amazed that you're able to achieve. It's amazing the innovation that can be applied, that equipment is that quiet. I mean, it just amazes me. I don't know how you do it.
I appreciate the creativity of our engineering team when they dream things up like that. You know, it took us a couple of years, but kudos to our team for having the initiative to do that, for having the vision to think that could be accomplished and ultimately getting there. But I think that just speaks to the level of innovation that exists inside our industry. I never cease to be amazed by it.
Yeah. It's so funny when I have conversations with individuals within the oil and gas industry, the market, it's like it's innovation on steroids. You have to constantly think of innovative ways of doing your work. You guys put your money where your mouth is. You make that investment. You do it. It's one thing to chirp about it. It's another thing to make it happen. Kudos. I think that's, and then that emissions. So that the electric option, I mean, I've been having a lot of conversations about just electric everything, right? There's a lot of horsepower and solutions there. I mean, it could be that's amazing.
It'd be a big step forward. You know, not a small undertaking, of course. If you looked at the equivalent of that, just thinking about people, I guess one frac fleet's probably the equivalent power draw of a town of, I don't know, 15,000 or 20,000 people. So it's a major undertaking to get that electrified. We probably don't take that power off the grid, at least not to start with. Maybe that's a long-term goal. We probably have to generate that power nearby ourselves, but it will still be a meaningful step forward from where we are today.
You just sort of glossed over that little statistic of the power requirement of a 20,000, population community. I grew up in that town in California, and you just sort of roll in about that and go, are you kidding me? That is stunning. How many megs would that be? I don't even know.
About something between 15 and 18 megawatts.
So you're looking at a GE type of deal.
On one side, yeah, you could use a gas turbine. That's certainly a solution that you'll find out there for generating that kind of power. We're going to take a little bit different approach maybe the equivalent of a hybrid electric vehicle where you have natural gas engines. But we're going to use recip engines, so kind of like a car engine, but run on natural gas together with a battery pack. That will allow us to deliver a bit of a hybrid electricity approach and run the engines as little as possible. So we're aiming for as low an emissions footprint as possible with that solution.
I'm telling you, man, that's dead sexy. I don't even know where to go with
all that.
It is
pretty cool. As an engineer, you smile every day getting up to do this stuff.
Yeah, see, I'm sitting there. I'm just geeking out on everything they're just saying. And, of course, my mind's going a gazillion miles per hour. But I love that. And you know what's interesting? And I'm not speaking for you. You're talking natural gas out at that last solution. Well, I mean, you guys know a little bit about natural gas, right?
A little bit, yeah.
good fit. Now let's sort of put on our future hat. Where do you see it going? I mean, there's a lot of activity going out there, a lot of uncertainty. I went to the gas station once in 6 months or something ridiculous, and so a lot of people are in that consumption. Where do you see it going? This whole future.
Give it to us. You're absolutely right. Last year, I can't remember what demand came off by at the low point, but it was pretty significant. A pretty meaningful dip in demand for our products. It's come back, not all the way, of course, but it might be off 3 or 4% now from where it was before. But you know, going into the whole downturn as a result of the pandemic, the world was consuming just a little north of 100 million barrels of oil a day. We're still up in the 90 million plus barrels of oil a day. And I'd be very surprised if we didn't get back up over 100 million barrels a day in the foreseeable future. And the story is not much different for gas. You know, if you we live a fantastic life here in North America. I mean, you look around and we are absolutely spoiled in terms of the world that we enjoy. There are still a billion people in the world that lack basically any access to electricity. There's another billion people in the world who have intermittent access to electricity. The demand for energy is still growing dramatically. And while we are working our way through a transition to add different forms of electricity generation to our world, we are still some ways from being in a place where I think that displaces oil and gas, particularly for transportation fuel and whatnot. I haven't seen the statistics for 2020 yet, but 2019 was a record year for total energy delivered by oil and gas in North America. And I'd be surprised if 2020 wasn't another record year in terms of percentage of total energy provided by oil and gas. It's a massive number. And so I expect that continues to grow for a while yet, simply because we don't have an easy replacement for it. You know, battery technologies come a ways, but it is still a long, long ways from being able to provide grid scale power to us for a meaningful period of time. And we're not in a place where batteries could have fixed the Texas issue that happened a couple of weeks ago. We're just not there yet. And so I see it continue to grow for some period of time. I'm kind of in the camp that we don't see peak oil and gas demand out, for another two decades probably yet. Decade and a half for sure, well into the 2030s, maybe into the 2040s. And so for at least as long as I'm going to be working, we're going to be working hard to produce oil and gas as cost effectively and with as little impact as possible.
See, that's passion, baby. That is absolutely
I love what I do. I love it, man.
So here's the funny thing. One of the things I just sort of stood, and we, once again, and you brought it up, we take it for granted. We live here in where we live. We have access to pretty much anything. We take it for granted, and we'll complain about something, and yet there are billions of people who do not have that type of luxury. And we forget that there are large portions of the world's population that don't have access to it.
Yeah, that's, so we have that global focus, but even here in North America, you know, you can look at a map of folks who still have to dedicate 10%+ of their household income to paying their energy bill. And so I think it's incumbent upon us to still continue to work here in North America to find ways to lower the cost of energy delivered into somebody's house. And so that's important to me. Out on the coast, it's the worst. You'll see significant portions of the population on the East and West Coast challenged by paying their energy bills, just given the cost of living in those areas. It's a little less prevalent through the middle of the country, but it is a big issue for people to afford energy, even here in North America today, despite how well off we are.
That is an interesting statement. And we're talking, you know, I don't like it when summer hits Louisiana. You cannot live in Louisiana without an AC. You just can't. Trust me, you can't. And if you think you can, well, you're lying. And my bill is substantial. But when it goes down, when there's an adjustment, whatever it might be, that's real value to the bottom line. That's real value to individuals and their and what they do. So that's important. You're clicking on all cylinders, Ron. Just FYI.
when you work in an industry that just plays that big a role in our world, the people here are passionate about it. And I think having worked in it as long as I do, and, you know, I've come to gain an appreciation for exactly what oil and gas has done for us. While we're not always, the most favorite thing to talk about, it's important. And so, you know, for as long as I'm here in this industry, I'm going to do all I can to make sure we're doing the best we possibly can to do what we need to do every day.
Awesome. All right. We're going to have to wrap it up. Are you out there on LinkedIn?
I certainly am.
Are you active?
I'm pretty active. Yeah. There's lots of great things to share out there, and social media is a wonderful avenue to get to people. So I do what I can to share what I think are valuable contributions to that community.
You've got it, Ron. You're a unique guy. You're just a unique guy. All right.
I've tried to tell my girls I'm an influencer, but they have a different definition of influencer than dad on LinkedIn.
Nah, you're not. you influence me. You could just say, hey, tell your girls, I've influenced Scott. That's about right. Yeah, no, you're not. Those influencers are influencers. They're amazing. All right. So we're going to have everything. Just FYI, you listeners out there, I love this conversation. We can keep on going. But we're going to have everything out on industrialtalk.com. And you need to get a hold of this gent. And great topic. Doggone it. I truly enjoyed it, Rob. A lot of good stuff out there.
I enjoyed it as well, Scott. Really appreciate the chance to get on here with you.
Yeah, you're dropping value bombs. It's just so cool. All right, innovation is on the gas, oil and gas innovation, what they're doing, the investments. They understand it. We need energy. Ron's right in the thick of it. All right, listeners, Ron Gusicki is on it. Thank you, Ron. You, all of a sudden, need to be staying tuned because we're going to wrap it up on the other side. So thank you very much for joining the Industrial Talk Podcast. We will be right back.
You're listening to the Industrial Talk Podcast Network.
All right, that's Ron. Told you, great guy, great purpose, great focus. All those people at Liberty Oilfield Services definitely serving a purpose and trying to deliver that energy as low as possible, as efficient as possible, leveraging technology and everything in between. Yep, that's Team Liberty Oilfield Services. Reach out to him. You'll have all the contact out on industrialtalk.com. All right, one last thing. Remember, Industrial Talk 2.0, we're creating a platform that is all about the collaboration. We're going to continue to do this. It's going to require a little heavy lifting on our side, but we're going to be able to do that. We're excited about it, and it's all about education, collaboration, and innovation. We need to spread that good word. So anyway, thank you very much. All right, be bold, be brave. Dare greatly. But my challenge to you is hang out with people who are bold, brave, and daring greatly, and you're going to change the world, just like Ron and Team Liberty Oilfield. Thank you very much. We're going to have another great interview right around the corner, so stay tuned.